one work is a series of works that are grouped by a common thread, that is the interaction between quantum information flow and causal structure. This is a quite recent line of research, and the works I will present are done in collaboration with a bunch of people from Pavia, Giacomo Mauro D'Ariano and Paolo Perinotti, from Paris, there is Benoit Valiron, and from PI, Lucien Hardy and Dina Genkina, who was a former PSI student who did her essay with Lucien and me last year. Before I start, I want to stress the impossible objective here, so don't get too excited. This is not a talk about science fiction, it's a talk about normal quantum mechanics, and I will assume the causality principle since the start. Let's go to a little bit of overview of this talk. I will start with describing a task, that is the switching of black boxes. The first thing, I will give a no-go theorem for this task in the circuit framework. So I will show that there is no causal circuit that can achieve this, this task in ordinary quantum mechanics. And then I will, by contradiction, I will assume that this no-go theorem doesn't hold, and I will show that if there is a circuit like that, this circuit would be able to realize a fictional time travel. So this is fiction, okay? It's not real quantum mechanics. After that, I will introduce the quantum switch as a new primitive that goes beyond the ordinary framework of causal quantum circuits. And so this will be this part. And I will present an application of this, this new primitive in the discrimination of no-signaling channels. In the conclusion, I will talk about the probabilistic simulation of quantum channels that take an input in the future and produce an output in the past. So they, we can call them in a fancy way quantum time travels, and they will show what is the best simulation of these impossible channels within the framework of causal quantum circuits. Okay, before starting, I will give a little bit of obvious notation just to fix the terms that I'm using. So this box, this diagram, rho with one wire, will represent a quantum state. So technically, this is a linear map from the complex number to the trace class operators. And the trace class here is just elegance, because anyway, I will talk in finite dimensions. So these are all linear operators. A box like this, with input A and output A prime, will be a linear map, mapping states of system A into states of system A prime. And a box like this obviously will represent a measurement. So this will be technically a map from states on system A prime to complex numbers. This is, I think, obvious to all of you, but important to fix notation. Obviously also, if I draw two boxes in sequence in this way, it means that I'm taking the composition of the two linear maps. And if I draw two boxes, one on top of the other, this means that this is a tensor of linear maps. Again, another thing, if I take the tensor with the identity map, I don't draw the box, but I just draw a straight line. Again, this I think is obvious, but this is part of the graphical notation that I will use. And obviously, to finish, if I draw a box with many wires, many input wires, and many output wires, this will be a linear map from a tensor product of input Hilbert spaces to the tensor product of output Hilbert spaces. To finish the dictionary part, I just want to stress that I will call quantum channel, QC, would be a completely positive trace preserving map. And if I say quantum operation, I mean instead a completely positive trace non-increasing map. So quantum channels are a particular case of quantum operations, and they are the trace preserving case. Okay, let's start. First of all, I would like to mention the causality principle, which can be formulated in general probabilistic theories. The idea here is that if we have a preparation test that produces randomly a set of states, rho I, and we have two measurements, so aj and bk, if we sum over the outcomes of the measurements, we get the same marginal probability distribution. So the physical meaning of this mathematical equation is that the probability of events that happen now at some point in a circuit, so this is in a circuit, this is before and this is after, so what happens now does not depend on the choices of what we will do later. So this is naturally what we mean by causality. So in other words, this expresses no signaling from the future. So it means that the direction from left to right in a circuit is the direction in which signals can propagate, while the other direction from right to left is not an allowed direction from the propagation of signals. Yeah? I'm sorry?
Yes.
So this, how does it relate to time? So there are two things. So this diagram represents the in quantum mechanics the trace of the state rho I, the unnormalized state rho I with the POVM operator aj. So this would be a joint probability distribution, and this is the marginal over the outcome of the measurement. And here the direction of time is from left to right. So the direction of the So what we are saying here is that if we have a random source of states that prepares, emits some states rho I with, well, emits some states rho I, the probability of emitting rho I is independent of the choice of the measurements that will be done later. This is. Oh, because I'm putting two arbitrary different measurements here. So you say for every couple of measurements, aj, and bk, so these are arbitrary, I should have said it. So these are two arbitrary measurements. No matter which one you choose, you get the same marginal.
So sum over j or over k means
yes. Yes, sorry, I should have said it. Yes, this means if you take the marginal over all the possible measurement outcomes, this probability does not depend on the choice of the measurement outcome. So in quantum mechanics, this is obviously the fact that POVMs are normalized to the identity. So this thing, once you trace, you sum, it becomes the trace of rho I. In a general probabilistic theory, this is not necessarily the case. So assuming this is a physical principle, something, so is a principle that you can assume in a theory. In this. Okay. Having said this, I will go to the task of switching black boxes. So this is the task. Imagine that you are given two black boxes that implement two quantum operations, E and F. These are the two boxes. And as you can see, the quantum operations act on the same quantum system with the Hilbert space A. So now also imagine that you are given a qubit system, Q, and you want to do this. So if the state of the qubit is 0, 0, you want to connect E and F in this order. So first E and then F. If the state of the qubit is 1, then you want first F and then E. So this seems something that you can obviously do by yourself, but it is easy to show that this cannot be done in a quantum circuit where you put the two boxes in a fixed order. So there is this easy theorem that was proved by me, Mauro, Paolo, and Benoit that says that if you choose a quantum circuit where composed by quantum channels, so A, B, and C here are channels, there is no way to invert the order of these two arbitrary black boxes in order to have to obtain the task quantum, the quantum switch task. So the limitation is here that we are putting the boxes in a fixed order in a circuit. So once we do that, there is no way to invert the order. So the theorem says that this diagram is impossible. Yeah?
Sorry, again to check. So you're saying that if I don't specify the two black boxes, so black boxes by definition are not specified?
Yes, are arbitrary quantum operators.
No way of writing this such that you can reverse arbitrary.
Yes.
But specific ones you could.
If you know what they are, yes, yes, you can. Well, trivially, in one case, you can just prepare a circuit that discards the two boxes and produces this. So if you know what they are, you can do it. But if these two boxes are arbitrary quantum operations, there is no way to invert the order once you put the boxes in the circuit in a given order. There is, in other words, once this is something I said, I think, once the two black boxes have been inserted in a circuit, there is no way to invert their causal relation. And the consequence of this is that the task switch that I described before cannot be implemented automatically by a quantum circuit that is both deterministic and causal. So deterministic means that it is composed by quantum channels, so that succeeds with probability one in doing the task, and causal means that we are choosing a fixed causal order to put all the boxes. So the two boxes are put there in a given causal order. So this is not possible.
Is that a different meaning of causal from the one before?
Which one before?
The one where you trace out over the elements.
Yes. Causal here is an objective of causal sequence.
Okay. So,
well, what I said before, like the causality principle is in the deterministic notion that a channel is a trace preserving map.
Okay.
So it preserves the unique deterministic effect that we have in a causal theory. Yeah?
When you say that the two operations, E and F, have a causal relation, does that imply in any way that F would be some sort of consequence of E?
No. It just means that the output of E can go to the input of F. To say that the causal relation is which output can go to the input of the other operation. So it means that what is fed into one quantum operation can influence what comes out of the other, and not vice versa. There is another.
It's whether there are families of channels.
Yes.
Where you can do that. So you said sort of if E and F are chosen from among a bunch of channels, this can't be done. But are there smaller families of channels where it can be?
Well, typically channels that have commuting across operators would be a case because it doesn't matter the order. A more clever example, I don't know.
So I was thinking, for example, it seems like you could go from E and F in that causal order to F dagger and E dagger in the opposite causal order, where by dagger I mean relative to the Hilbert-Schmidt inner product.
I don't really see it, but...
Well, you sort of post-select on entanglement so that you kind of run your state.
Oh, yes, but post-select would not be a deterministic circuit.
That's true.
So that's why I stressed these two words. So the no-go theorem works if you assume that all the elements of the circuit are channels, except for the two black boxes that are quantum operations. Indeed, I will talk about non-deterministic circuits that are of the post-selection form later. Okay, there is a relation of this impossible task with the impossible time travels. So suppose that we have a circuit that now is made of linear maps, not necessarily quantum channels. So this is a fictional circuit. It's not anymore a deterministic quantum circuit. Suppose that we have this fictional circuit that can implement the switch. So if this is true, then in particular, in place of these two quantum operations, we can put a quantum operation that measures on a POVM outcome and produces a state. This is the next slide. You see here, instead of E, I put measuring and obtaining P and preparing rho. Measuring, and instead of F, I put measuring Q and preparing sigma. So by definition, if the circuit succeeds in doing the switch, it must be able to do this. So you put this part first, this part next, and so you obtain this diagram. So what we are saying here is that we are measuring P on the state sigma. So look that P in the original circuit is here and sigma is there. So in a sense, it's as though we are able to suck sigma back in time to bring it there, to be able to make the measurement of P on it. So this suggests the relation with time travels, and we can make it formal. Indeed, we can use the probabilistic teleportation identity. So we know that measuring P on sigma is the same of measuring P on one side of a maximally entangled state, and then measuring a maximally entangled effect, the teleportation effect on sigma, and scaling everything by a factor d squared. So this is a mathematical identity. So we can substitute this identity in the previous formula, and what we obtain is this. Our original circuit is equivalent to this circuit. a circuit that measures the input state on Q and contains a deterministic time travel. So this is mathematically, this identity is the identity that says that state sigma, which is which appears at this time step, is sent back in time with probability one, because this is a rescaled teleportation diagram. So this is a mathematical expression of a fictional time travel. Okay, so the conclusion of this little discussion is that if we have a fictional circuit of linear maps that implements the task switch, then the same circuit is able to implement a fictional deterministic time travel, so time travel with probability one. We can also prove the converse. So if we have access to a fictional circuit that performs deterministic time travel, we can also use it to construct a fictional circuit that implements the task switch. So I hope I convinced you that this task cannot be achieved in the ordinary framework of causal quantum circuits. So now I will start considering, so yes, there is a summary of this. This is what I was saying. There is no way to implement the task in the ordinary causal and deterministic circuit. And doing this would be equivalent to implementing a fictional time travel. Yep. Yes. Yeah.
Why this one and not any other situation that is not possible? Why is that more interesting then? So I don't understand why the focus on this switch.
Well, because in a sense, what I will say next is that it is possible, but outside the framework of quantum circuits. So I first wanted to make the point that this is not possible under the hypothesis that I presented now. And now I will say that in a different framework, this can be considered as a new primitive and something that can be assumed to be possible. So, and after all, I found that it was nice to show the relation with the time travels. So maybe this is, I mean, it is impossible in quantum circuits, but it was.
Right, but there are,
I found
many
it
things
nice
that are impossible.
I'm sorry?
There are many things that are impossible.
Oh, yes, yes.
So you've chosen one that.
Yes, I could have chosen cloning, for instance, but but in this case, because I will talk about this switch, because I will talk in about this switch as a new primitive, first I wanted to discuss what would it mean to have it in the ordinary framework of circuits. So this is the reason why I spent time on that, because this is the topic of the talk. So. This is what I will do now, to consider it as a new primitive. Why will I do that? So first, there is a little bit of physical intuition. I proved that this task is impossible in ordinary quantum circuits, and it would even be equivalent to something crazy like time travels. But on the other hand, it is obvious that we can do that. The task that I described is something that we can do, because we can always measure the control qubit, see if the state is 0 or 1, and depending on the outcome, with our hand, we can mount the circuit. So this is obviously something that we can practically do, although it cannot be done in the hypothesis that I showed before. So first of all, intuitively, we should say that the switch that I described before is something that we can actually do, but the framework in which we can do this goes beyond the ordinary framework of circuits. This is almost trivial. There is something more to say. Usually in quantum mechanics, we have the purification principle, which suggests that whenever we can do something by a measurement, we can also do the same operation coherently without resorting to a measurement. So what I will discuss later is the implementation of the switch of quantum boxes in a coherent way. And this is what I will consider as a new primitive that goes beyond the framework of quantum circuits. I hope. Yep. I mean, a circuit composed by quantum channels and unit trace states, which are connected in a fixed order. So you choose your boxes, decide if F comes before E or vice versa, and put many quantum channels in between. Well, many, one channel in between. And one channel before and one after. So this is a determinist, what I mean by a deterministic circuit. So, and there is no such circuit that can switch the order of the two boxes. This is the first part of the talk. Okay, let's continue with the physical intuition. So suppose that we are able to control the path that the quantum system A follows depending on the state of the qubit. So if the state of the control qubit is zero, we have the first causal structure, zero, where the system is first routed to the black box E and then to F. So in a cartoon version, you can imagine the system going first to E and then to F. Otherwise, if the state of the control qubit is one, we can imagine that the system is routed first to F and then back to E. So what we are doing now is to invoke the superposition principle of quantum mechanics. So if the state of the control qubit is a superposition of 0 plus 1, we will have, this cartoon for the evolution. Depending on the state of the control, the system will split into branches following two different paths that will recombine in the end. This is the intuition of what I will discuss later. Is this clear? Is it clear where I'm going to?
What's the role of the green?
So the green system here would be the control qubit. So this qubit controls the path that is followed by the orange qubit on the top. Yeah? I'm sorry? Ah, yes. It would be possible, but one would need to write these two boxes two times. So, after you could argue that in fact the circuit is not using the boxes two times, but in fact only once, but in the canonical framework of quantum circuit, this would be a circuit where these two boxes appear twice because the system is passing one time here and then is going a second time. So the big difference between the switch and the circuit is that in the switch we can do things with one use instead of two uses. This is the gain that this task offers. Okay, going to the mathematics. So we can consider the case of pure input states and single Krauss quantum operations of this form. So E of rho is E rho E dagger and F of rho is F rho F dagger. So what happens is that if the state of the system is phi, and the state of the control is zero, this will evolve to EF applied to phi, tensor zero. If the state of the system is phi and the state of the control is one, this will be FE applied to phi, tensor one. This is the definition of what should happen when the control is in state zero and state one. Then by linearity, if the control is in the state C, that is a superposition of zero and one, we have the superposition of these two terms. Is it clear? What?
Are you using this notation in an extended way? So if I see FE acting on phi, I think that that's a vector?
Yes.
But that's no longer a vector, right? Because, these are pure.
This is the pure state picture. So, and I think in the next slide or in the second to next, I will go to the mixed picture. Okay. Just by taking sums of these things, nothing special. So this is the pure picture, single Krauss quantum operations and rank one quantum states. Thanks for the precision. So now let's go to the mixed picture. So we have rho and we have multiple Krauss quantum operation. So we can define for each fixed choice of So pure input state and Krauss and generic Krauss operators. So for each couple of Krauss operators EI and FJ, I will use the same formula as before. So this is the same equation I defined in the previous slide, just here for a fixed value of I and J together. So I define the new quantum channel applied to a pure state as the sum over I and J of these projectors on the vectors. So I think this is the obvious generalization to mixed states of what I defined before. So if we do a little bit of computation, what happens is this. So this new quantum channel that I defined contains four terms. In two terms, we have with different probabilities the two different causal orderings. So you see, with probability alpha modulus square, we have first E and then F. With probability beta modulus square, we have first F and then E. This would be everything in the classical scenario. So, and that's why I call this the classical terms. They are the random choice of two different causal structures. But the interesting thing is that we have also the off-diagonal terms that represent the interference between the two different choices of causal structures. And for those who have mathematical concerns, it is important to say that this definition is independent of the choice of Krauss forms. So it doesn't matter that I choose this particular Krauss form to define my map. Whichever Krauss form I would have defined, this would have been the same. So this is a well-defined quantum map. Okay, so this is the mathematical definition. So what I defined is a quantum map that takes two quantum operations, E and F, and the state of a control system, and given this, produces a new quantum channel. So this is a linear map, and its domain is a set of linear maps of this form. So are maps transforming states on A tensor A into states from A tensor A tensor the control qubit. So this is where this map acts. And these maps have to satisfy suitable non-signaling conditions. I will go quite fast on this because it's not very important, but I just want to give you the flavor of it. So first of all, well, let's talk about bipartite non-signaling maps. If we have a bipartite map from A tensor B to A prime tensor B prime, we say that this map is non-signaling if the state on B prime doesn't depend on the input, the output state on B prime doesn't depend on the input state on A. So this is what this diagram means. If we discard A prime, the output on B prime does not depend on the input on A, because it is the same as tracing the input on A. And the same is for the output state on A prime. Here we are saying that if we discard the output on B prime, what we have on A prime does not depend on the input on B. So this expresses the fact that there is no signaling from A to B prime and no signaling from B to A prime. This is what is normally called the non-signaling map. And in the multipartite case, we can say that a multipartite map with N input systems and N output systems is non-signaling if whichever system we trace, let's say the kth system, we obtain something. So the state of all the system but the kth one does not depend on the input of the kth system. So this condition says that there is no signaling from k to all the rest of the systems in the map. And we assume that what remains is also in turn a no signaling map. So this is the definition of no signaling in the general multipartite case. And this is what we need to talk about the domain of the quantum switch that I defined. So this map that takes two boxes and one state and produces one box, one channel, has as the domain the set of tripartite non-signaling maps. So we go from A tensor A tensor the complex numbers to A tensor A tensor Q, and the maps that can be sent here in the input must be non-signaling maps. Otherwise, this gives unphysical effects. Okay, so what I defined, this quantum switch, is a new primitive, so it's something that makes perfectly sense mathematically, but is not possible, as I showed at the beginning, within the framework of quantum circuits. So it is a new primitive that goes beyond the ordinary quantum circuit model. And now I will try to argue that this new primitive is something useful, actually. So I will discuss an application of it in the discrimination of channels. So imagine this kind of classification problems. You are given two black boxes, E and F. So they are channels each one with its own Krauss form. And there is a premise in this problem. So there are two possibilities. Either the Krauss operator of E and the Krauss operator of F commute, so this is the first case, or the anti-commute. The task that you have to solve is to find which one is the case. So whether the Krauss operators of these two channels commute or whether they anti-commute. So it is easy to see that if you are allowed to use this quantum switch, you can distinguish between these two cases. It is very easy, actually. If you can prepare the control qubit in the state plus, superposition of 0 and 1. You apply the quantum switch. So what we obtain for every I and J, for every couple of Krauss operator, is this expression, as I showed before. So we have EF if the state is 0 and FE if the state of the control is 1. Now, of course, if the Krauss operators commute, there is no difference between this term and this term. So what we have is like EF tensor plus. While if they anti-commute, there is a difference of a minus sign between these two terms. So we obtain EF tensor minus. So this means that by measuring the state of the control qubit in the end, after the quantum switch has been applied, we can perfectly distinguish between these two classes of channels. Okay, there is, so in other words, yes, this is kind of obvious. So in the case plus, you would get first E and then F, and the control is in the state plus. If the case is minus, you get again E and F applied on the system, and the control state in minus. So, of course, with this we can distinguish perfectly the two classes. And I have also a cartoon for that. So in the case plus, of course, we have the same interference as before, and we obtain, the controls qubit in the state plus. If the class is minus, okay, again, we have the same graphical interference of this path going through the circuit, and we end up in the state minus. Okay, this is very nice, of course you may ask whether one could do the same within an ordinary quantum circuit. And this is the hard part of the job here, is to show that no, you cannot distinguish the two classes of boxes if you have an ordinary circuit where you put the boxes in a fixed order. And so this is the theorem that they proved, that no classical deterministic circuit can distinguish perfectly between the two classes of boxes using a single query. So that's the important part, using a single query. Because if you were allowed two queries, you could distinguish. But using a single query, there is no circuit that can do that. So this, I hope, convinces you that this new primitive of quantum switch is useful to solve a quantum information problem. Yes?
Sorry, I will ask again because I'm confused. So when you say this new,
yes,
is that something that cannot be realized in nature?
I think it can be realized in nature, but it's not described by a quantum circuit, according to the rules.
So can you realize it in nature with one query of the boxes?
Well, I'm not an expert of experiments, but I would say that it should be possible.
But then I thought that we could always represent anything that happens in nature with a quantum circuit to some accuracy.
Well, probably the point is what are the rules that we assume when we want to draw something with a circuit. So if we allow ourselves to draw a circuit where you use twice the boxes, and then we argue in some sense that in fact we are not using.
I think of a quantum circuit as a particular way of representing a unitary evolution, mm-hmm. where I'm not making any assumption. I'm assuming that the systems involved are finite dimensional,
yes.
And then I'm assuming that the Hamiltonian evolution is generated by a local Hamiltonian, and I can break this Hamiltonian evolution into small steps,
mm-hmm.
and then I get the quantum circuit. And I don't understand how you want to go beyond. So how you want to represent what process could be physical and not representable by a quantum circuit?
I think that the the simplest example that we can consider is the classical switch. So imagine that we want to connect the two boxes in one way if the state of the qubit is zero, and in another way if the state is one, without superpositions, just the,
this. So with superposition is the key point, right?
Yes, but I mean, the question you asked applies also to the case without superposition. So you are saying, can this task be done or not in nature? And I'm saying, in the case without superposition, I would say clearly yes, it can. Although it is not a circuit in any way.
With one query?
Yes, it is not a circuit with one query, because this is...
But the key point of the utility of this primitive comes from the superposition.
Yes,
so
that's
the fact
right.
That you can distinguish between commuting and anti-commuting black boxes
mm-hmm.
comes from the fact that you have a superposition.
Yes, yes, yes.
So that's a genuine quantum effect.
That's right.
So we should discuss the quantum case directly.
Yes, yes. Yes, I mean, what I'm saying is that, unfortunately, I'm not an expert of implementations, so I cannot really, I mean, present you the way this can be done. While it is clear in the classical case, in the quantum case, I don't know exactly how it should be done.
But you think that
one normally makes an assumption that what you can do classically is sort of explicable quantum mechanically. I mean, it might not be, I'm interested. But you seem to be making quite a strong, a surprising statement.
Can I first say one thing regarding Gifra's question? So I'm not an expert of realizations, but if I had to place my bet how it should be realized, I would imagine a kind of optical scenario where we have like a polarizing beam splitters, and the polarization degree of freedom controls the path of the quantum system. So there would be a photon that is going either in one branch of a circuit or in the other branch, depending on the polarization. And I can imagine that...
Yeah, but that would be a quantum circuit at this point.
But when you draw it, it would be a circuit that uses the boxes twice.
But yes, but that's what you're describing.
In what sense? The problem is, you know, how one defines single query and so on, right?
Yes, this is...
In any way in which you implement this, there are different times at which, you know, the boxes are being used, right? I mean, depending on what sort that you choose...
Yes, we are always...
I mean, I thought that's a bit like two queries, right? It's because it's a different time.
Yes, whenever we think of these realizations, we always think in a causal structure. So there are two moments of time. So also in my cartoon, there is a first moment where the beam is split in two parts and goes either in one box or in the other, and the second moment when the beam goes again in a different order in the two boxes. This is what we do when we picture this thing. We can... Now we can have two approaches. One approach is just to say, okay, if we count the resources, we are actually using each box only once. So we can try to devise some physical model where we are count the box as a kind of counter inside.
But then
wouldn't
it
inside?
Be better to say that the new, sorry, how do you say?
Primitive.
Yeah, new primitive is boxes that can be used or not?
Yes. Well, it depends on what is more natural.
Just saying that maybe it's kind of more, I don't know if more general, maybe not more general.
Yes, it's the fact of controlling in quantum superposition whether or not you're using a box. You can put it like that. But this is one thing. The other thing is just that you consider it like plainly as a primitive, like the no signaling boxes of Popescu and Rorlich. You can consider this as a primitive that takes the boxes and you don't know how it produces this output channel with one uses of the boxes. And you can study how can you can solve problems if you are allowed to have this special power. So this is the kind of unphysical way. So suppose that I have access to this primitive. Let's see which kind of information processing I can do. So there are these two different approaches. Either you assume it as a primitive to cure, or you realize it in a circuit, and you say, but I count the resources in a different way, and then this accounts to using the boxes only once.
So if you could imagine having exploding boxes, so anytime a system actually passes through
mm-hmm.
a box, it performs the transformation, but then it also explodes.
Yes.
So now let's imagine you allow yourself actually to have two copies of each box and put them in the circuit that would do that. But then I think it's the case that actually only one box of each type would explode. Is that right?
I'm sorry, can you...
I think it's then the case that only one box of each type would explode, so that in some sense...
Yes, well, the notion of explode is a little bit tricky because this would induce a kind of decoherence.
Okay, so you have two explosions, maybe you could
there should be a counter.
Right, so something, how many explosions?
It's like in the quantum eraser case, you should know only in the end that each box has been used one time, but you should not extract information about the order from the counter. So it should be a single counter for each repetition of the two boxes. So there is a counter that says this box has been used only once in all this circuit. I think there was a... yes, Marcus?
No.
Okay. Yes?
Is it obvious that passing the vacuum through a box should count as not using it? I just wanted to do the same calculation and... What worries me is in a situation like the Litzer-Weidman bomb testing problem, you might say, well, whenever the vacuum passes by the bomb, I haven't used the bomb. But that would suggest to you some wrong conclusions about what you can measure, that this idea that vacuum doesn't have any impact on the bomb. I'm just sort of telling you my motivation for asking the question without going into details, but could it be that there's a way of expressing, what it means to use a box, where even vacuum passing through the box is a use of that box?
I mean, all the counting of resources is something that is part of our modeling. So it's, in a sense, it's our choice how to do that. And to justify the fact that the box is used only once, I would endorse the idea that if the vacuum goes in the box, we are not using the information theoretic resource that is in that box. Yes?
So, Giulio, in the end, I'm not too interested in definitions, but I would like to understand if it's true that there is some quantum process that you cannot describe with a quantum circuit without having to double resources. Of course, without having to double the number of queries, but of course, then it's a matter of definition of what the query is.
Yes.
But I'm really surprised by even the intention of having, or your claim that if you try to do this as a quantum circuit, then you have to double some form of resources. Because, I don't know of any process that you cannot write as a quantum circuit.
Yes. I was surprised too when I...
No, what I mean is that to me, a quantum circuit is a way of talking about arbitrary quantum mechanical processes.
Well, I think that the lesson here is about how you count the resources in a quantum
circuit. But that is just a definition. In one case, you call it single query, and in the other case, you call it double query. I mean, you said you are not an expert in implementations, but you have a picture of maybe how this could be implemented.
Yes, which is what I was saying in this kind of quantum optics representation.
Yeah, but that's a quantum circuit.
Well, this is a quantum circuit. Yes.
So I don't understand. Can you give me an explanation of this primitive, an implementation of this primitive that would not be a quantum circuit?
So also the quantum optics example that I gave is not a circuit that uses these two boxes, but uses new boxes where there is a control of. So these boxes become controlled boxes. So the theorem says that you cannot do that in a circuit that uses the two quantum operations that I gave. The quantum optical circuit I gave uses new quantum operations that are controlled boxes.
Controlled boxes?
Yes. So in this sense, it is a circuit, but it doesn't escape the no-go theorem.
So then there is no, this primitive cannot be realized unless you use it. You don't have an example of how to realize this primitive.
No.
It's a quantum circuit where you use. Okay.
No. Of course, there is this kind of more visionary point of view where you think if I assume that there is not a fixed causal structure, there could be some physical process in a kind of quantum gravity scenario where this happens. But as long as we stay within the ordinary framework of causal quantum mechanics, I cannot imagine any realization which is not a circuit of some sort.
Okay.
maybe using the control boxes. Yes?
Can I ask for one last clarification?
Yes.
I think I understand. Let me verify. So you're imagining that you might have an adversary who has black box for E, black box for F. And the distinction between the two scenarios, you know, one where you can't do the switch and one where you can, is if you say, oh, I'm allowed to build something, and then I have access to E between time T1 and T1 prime, and I have access to F between time T2 and T2 prime, which are after T1 and T1 prime. That would be like the first model. And the second model is that between T1 and T1 prime, you can call E and you can call F, and similarly at T2, you can call E and you can call F.
Yes.
And that's the fundamental distinction between the two models.
Yes, you are not allowed to use the boxes more than once, but you are allowed to use them at both times. Again, we are talking with times, so we are implicitly always assuming that everything is already in some sort of quantum circuit. This thing could be interesting also in a more general scenario where we don't have a predefined causal structure. But I mean, usually I prefer not to go too strongly in that direction. This is a nice thing to imagine, that it could become a new primitive if we have a different theory of quantum mechanics without a predefined causal structure. Okay. So this was impossible under the hypothesis of the theorem. If we relax the hypothesis, then we can have this in ordinary quantum circuit. So one obvious way is to use one of the boxes twice, as we were probably saying already. So if you are allowed to use the box E two times, using a control swaps, you can exactly realize the quantum switch. So this would be a deterministic circuit that uses two queries, two E. And otherwise, there is a possibility of having a probabilistic simulation using a teleportation and post-selection. So also in this case, using control swap, you can see that if the control is in the state zero, so there is no swap, so this the system goes to E, then to F, and then to the end. So if the state of the control is one, there is a swap, so the system goes first here, then is swapped back, it goes to F, then it is swapped to the top, and this is probabilistic teleportation, so it goes back again, and it goes to E, then it goes here, and it goes out again. So this is a probabilistic way to realize the switch with only one copy, but this succeeded with probability 1 over D squared. And this brings me to the end of the talk, that is about the probabilistic simulations of quantum channels with an input in the future and an output in the past. Again, there is an impossible task, like quantum cloning. So the task is, can we have a quantum channel that takes a quantum state in the future and processes this information and sends the output in the past? The answer is obviously no. We cannot have this because causality forbids this. So there is no way to have a state in the past that depends on an input that will come in the future, because this would violate causality in the way I stated it at the beginning. So this is an impossible task, like quantum cloning. And the question is, I will now talk about the probabilistic realizations of this task. What is the best way to realize this? And so the notion of probabilistic simulation was introduced by Bennett and Schumacher, and in a different terms by Svetlicny and Koeke. So they thought that probabilistic teleportation, so with post-selection, could be considered as a simulation of the impossible time travel with some probability. So, and using the results, the idea by Bennett and Schumacher, we can think that we can simulate any channel from the future to the past using a teleportation. So we can teleport the input state back into the past and then apply the channel, for example. So this idea has been further elaborated recently by Seth Lloyd and other people who also did a kind of quantum optics experiment on this. So the problem that we analyzed, this was in Dina Genkina's essay for the completion of the Psi program master. So the question was, so with the teleportation, we can always simulate any channel with probability 1 over d squared, where d is the dimension of the Hilbert space. So the question is, what is the maximum probability such that we can simulate a channel? So in general, it could be larger than 1 over d squared. And so the idea is to consider all possible schemes where we have a bipartite state psi and we have a bipartite measurement, so that this post-selected scheme simulates the channel from the future to the past. The first result that we found is called the causality bound, and it is in terms of the Choi state of the channel. So for those of you who are not familiar, the Choi state of a channel is the state that you obtain by applying a channel to a maximally entangled state. So this is, by definition, the Choi state. So we have this bound, this expression for the maximum probability. So the maximum probability of simulating a given channel is given by the maximum overall possible quantum states of this expression. So we have the condition is that the probability p multiplied by the Choi operator should be smaller in the operator ordering of the state rho tensor the maximally mixed state. Actually, I discovered recently that this quantity is one of the generalized entropies defined by Renner and his school. So if I'm not mistaken, this value, the logarithm of this p, is the max entropy in the hierarchy of all possible entropies. So what we are saying here is that this maximum value is the probability of simulation for a channel. So if you want to find it, you have to solve this operator inequality, which is what we did in some particular cases. So some relevant and easy cases are this. So for every channel, of course, the probability is larger than 1 over d square, and the equality holds for ideal channels. For channels where you measure the quantum system and prepare some other state, the bound becomes 1 over d instead, and the equality is reached for classical channels. And of course, for erasure channels, the probability is 1, because these channels erase all the information, and so you can realize them. Trivially, you can always prepare a state and trace the input that will come in the future. So as a rule of thumb, what happens, what we can extract from this pattern is that causality imposes that the probability of the simulation is inversely proportional to the amount of information that the channel can transmit. And I will try to make this more precise in the next slides. So you can imagine, so to make this more precise, you can imagine a communication scenario where there are two parties, Alice and Bob. And Alice wants to transmit a state that she has in the future back to Bob, who wants to receive it in the past. So we can imagine that Alice has a family of states, rho I, with prior probabilities pi I, and that Alice uses these states to communicate to Bob. So she can sense them through the channel, and Bob would receive the output of this. So of course, in a communication scenario, Alice can encode a message, I, in the input state, and Bob can try to decode it. In general, he will get a different message, J, from the output. So we can introduce a payoff function that quantifies the success of the communication scheme. Typically, this would be maximum if I is equal to J, so if Bob guesses the right message. And so we can introduce the average payoff. So the average of the payoff function over the probability distribution of the outcomes. So what you can do is to prove this statistical information bound that says that the probability of simulation is always smaller or equal than a constant divided by the payoff in this communication game. So this, in a sense, makes quantitative the relation between the amount of information that the channel can transmit, that here is quantified by the average payoff, and the probability. It is a bound still, it's not an equality, but it says that the probability is bounded by the inverse of the amount of information that we can transmit through the channel. To conclude, I have a couple of examples, again, some more involved calculation regarding partial trace. So we can imagine a channel that takes n identical copies of a pure state in the future and sends one copy in the past. And we can ask, so this is the probabilistic simulation of the partial trace channel. And we can ask what is the probability of this simulation. And the question is whether or not the probability increases with the number of copies. Of course, maybe, I don't know if it is obvious immediately to you, but in the classical case, this probability cannot increase with the number of copies, because in the classical case, you can always copy pure states. So it doesn't matter how many copies you have. The number of copies will not increase your probability to have a simulation. And so this is the question. So in, can we have a dependence on the number of copies? And in the classical world, we have no dependence due to the possibility of cloning pure states. So the surprising thing is that in the quantum case, we do have a dependence. So the probability of simulation of this teleportation from n copies to one copy is given by this expression. So you can see that when the number of copies is equal to 1, this is 1 over d squared, so the usual probability of teleportation. But when n grows, this probability increases and asymptotically reaches 1 over d. So this is more or less the picture in the broad picture that we have, is that quantum teleportation has this curve that starts from 1 over d squared with one copy and asymptotically reaches the bound, the value for ideal classical channels, which says something, I think, about how the partial trace, about the fact that the partial trace doesn't really convey quantum information. So the amount of quantum information, the information that is in the output of a partial trace from many copies to one is classical, essentially. So this is a non-classical feature, the fact that the probability of teleportation increases with the number of input copies. And well, in other words, this means that traveling back in time would be easier if you had many identical twins. You can do the same calculation for general partial trace channels from n to m copies. And you can do the same calculation for universal cloning channels, where you have n input copies and m output copies. The interesting thing is that the probability of simulation is the same for the partial trace and for cloning. So there is a kind of time reversal duality between partial trace and cloning, and is given by a ratio of dimensions of symmetric subspaces. And again, it is interesting to see that in the large number of copies limit, we get the classical value 1 over the dimension. So we can give a heuristic explanation of this, and the explanation is in the fact that can be given by two facts. The first is that the statistical information bounds that I explained before give that the probability must be smaller than 1 over the dimension of the output system. And on the other hand, there is a result by me in like a couple of years ago showing that partial trace and cloning converge in the limit to measure and prepare channels if we take the asymptotic limit. So, and we saw that measure and prepare channels must always have a probability larger than 1 over the dimension. So if something that is bounded to have probability smaller than this is converging to something that has probability larger than this, there is only one possibility, that the value of the probability to which it converges is exactly 1 over the dimension. Okay, ready for the conclusions? So the first part, I showed that switching boxes is impossible within a certain framework of causal deterministic circuits. So in the framework where we use exactly the two given boxes in a given order in a circuit of quantum channels. So this is not possible. I showed that a fictional circuit that does this would be equivalent to a deterministic time travel. And I also showed that if we assume a quantum version of the switch as a new primitive, you can do some things that would not be possible in an ordinary framework of circuits, like this classification of different pairs of boxes with commuting and anti-commuting Krauss operators. Then I moved to the simulation, the probabilistic simulation of this impossible quantum channels from the future to the past. And so I showed that there is a dependence on the probability of simulation on the amount of information that the channel transmits. And there is this non-classical effect when we have many copies of a pure state and we want to send only one or less copies to the past. There is this dependence on the probability on the number of copies. That is something that doesn't happen in the classical case. With this, I concluded. So thank you for your attention.
So would it kind of, I mean, suppose we have this black box, or it's a switch thing that allows us to essentially do, effectively do time travel, right? Does that mean we can then implement cloning of states, or some probability?
No, I don't think there is a relation. I mean, I haven't...
Because you can simulate, if you have copies, you can simulate sort of probabilistically.
I mean, cloning is possible probabilistically. This is already
right,
known
right,
without...
At least you're sort of getting the advantage of it, if you had this switch.
No. So this switch primitive would, I mean, if you assume that you are able to do this, you can do, you can improve information processing, like in the example that I showed, but you cannot clone states,
right?
Because cloning states would really lead to contradictions.
Right, but just with higher probability than otherwise, but that's the case.
No. Well, this switch, the way I defined it, is a deterministic thing. It takes two boxes and produces a new box that has that property. And that thing is possible conceptually because it doesn't lead to any contradiction. Cloning would lead to contradictions. So you cannot use the switch to have cloning because by definition, I mean, you cannot use something that doesn't lead to contradiction to obtain something that would lead to contradictions. Yes?
So I'm uncomfortable with calling the process you described as deterministic time travel,
mm-hmm.
calling that time travel. So I'm also disputing the fact that Bennett, Schumacher, and Svetlicheny have called this post-selected teleportation time travel. So it's a criticism of that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so let me tell you what I'm concerned about. That say I have two bits, you know, one I prepare early, the other I prepare late, and then I just check for equality. Okay, so it's totally impossible. Then you could say, well, if I don't know whether they're equal or not, then you know, knowing the value of this bit teaches me nothing about the value of that bit. So I cannot make any retrodictions,
mm-hmm.
right? But if I post-select on learning the value of that equality, all of a sudden I can make retrodictions. Learning
yes.
the value of what this one said allows me to infer what the value of the other one is.
Yes.
But it's still not true that changing this value sometimes reaches back in time and changes that value. The post-selection has only allowed me to make inferences about the past, not causal influences on the past. And so it seems to me that what's going on in those teleportation circuits is exactly analogous to what I'm describing. So wouldn't it be
mm-hmm.
better to stop calling this time travel and start calling it post-selected retrodiction?
Well, I chose the name just because it was fancier, but I totally agree with what you say. Yeah, so you would call it post-selected retrodiction?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, on the other hand, you have the circuit is equivalent to one over d squared times the identity. Now, if rather than having one over d squared, you have one, then that certainly would be my trouble.
You can make your retrodiction with certainty. It still doesn't follow that that's a causal influence.
But if you had an identity that went back in time, you probably want that would be time trouble.
It depends what the thing that goes. If you say I have a channel that goes back in time, what does that channel describe? Does it describe a propagation of a causal influence,
well,
or a propagation about what you believe about a system?
But it would describe causal influence in the sense that you could change something here, and it would affect something in the past with property one. If the constant was equal to one, it would. Just like if I have a channel, the identity,
yeah.
from here to here,
sure.
and I change something here, then I affect what happens on the output of that identity. Causal. So it's the sort of constant that stops it. The fact that the constant is is less than one that stops it being real-time travel.
I guess I'm not clear what hypothetical we're imagining. Like when somebody says, suppose that rather than doing post-selection, deterministically the outcome comes out right. That's the sort of thing you're imagining.
In a certain proportion of cases, you're successfully getting the identity journal, and then if you post-select on that set of cases, then you have the identity channel, so you have a positive time travel but I think somehow this sort of rect prediction picture doesn't quite get the whole picture.
What is it miss?
Well, there is always also the ambiguity when even in the causal scenario, when we draw a channel, we can always either interpret it as a propagation of our information or in a more realistic sense, instead, there's a propagation of some influence. So I think this applies both to channels from the past to the future and to channels from the future to the past. So you can always say that what is propagating is the information that you have. I mean, these are maps in both cases. So I agree.
Okay, so my comment on that would be that I think one of the weaknesses of the quantum formalism as we now use it is that it's unable to distinguish propagation of our information from propagation of influences. And in the classical context, people have proposed remedying the framework of classical probability theory in order to be able to make that distinction.
Mm-hmm.
So this is Judea-Pearl's due calculus allows you to distinguish between whether you're talking about the probability of X given that you learn Y as opposed to the probability of X given that you made Y the case. And
mm-hmm.
So despite the fact that it's true what you say of quantum channel, don't currently make a distinction, that doesn't mean that a distinction ought not to be made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I just wanted to point out that this is not special of channels from the future to the past, but is
true.
I mean, it's a property of the quantum formalism, how we interpret channels, essentially, or quantum operations.
So maybe that also, Lucien, would resolve this issue that if there were some distinction between an identity channel, which is like the probability of X given Y, and another identity channel, which is the probability of X given that you made Y the case, then if you could show it's an identity channel, of the latter sort, that's a causal influence.
Okay.
Other questions for Julia?
Could one imagine trying to implement this sort of switches by actually having some mechanical device that cantilever, so you can imagine if you put a cantilever, in principle you put a small cantilever in a superposition of being here and here using a quantum system, and then if on the end of your cantilever you actually have one of your operations, your E operation for example, then maybe you could have it in a superposition of being at an earlier time. Well, at an earlier position, earlier position or later position, respectively. But I don't know if that would succeed in doing what you want to do. So,
I think it's a kind of dual description to the description where the system is rooted to different paths. Instead of rooting the system, we are really changing the connections in the circuit with this kind of cantilever. And yes, I mean, besides the technical limitations, I think practically no one would be able to do it now in the lab. I think that's the idea anyway. There is a kind of quantum robot that chooses how to arrange the circuit depending on a quantum state and does it coherently and not by measuring. Well, in a sense also the fact that it's not clear how to realize it, it means that these kind of investigations have something to say, something new to say about quantum theory. So there are things that mathematically appear to be possible in the formalism and don't lead to any contradiction, like this switch, and we don't have ideas how to realize them in our current, well, we don't have many ideas how to realize them in our current picture of what can be done in a lab. So in a sense, I mean, the practical implementation of this is tricky, but I think it's part of the stimulating aspects of this particular primitive. So try to imagine how this would be possible in a physical scenario.